Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the podcast of The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of today's show. The rest of today's show is available for download and on-demand listening at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. New York Times investigative reporter Kurt Eichenwald is my next guest. You know, if you know his byline, he's used to gaining the trust of sources. His usual work on the corporate fraud beat involves convincing potential executives to dish the dirt on their bosses' unlawful activity, things like that. But the subject of his most recent story was very different. For a 6,000-word piece last month, Eichenwald turned to the world of online child porn. His main source, Justin Berry, was an adolescent who broadcast live sexual acts on his webcam for money. What started off as an effort to make friends online turned into a serious porn business, earning the teenager hundreds of thousands of dollars over 5 years. But in the course of the story, Eichenwald also found himself intervening in the life of his source. Justin had become addicted to cocaine and even contemplated suicide, but with the reporter's help, Justin abandoned his porn activity and even cooperated with federal prosecutors. Through Eichenwald's investigation, there were sweeping arrests, and many of the largest webcam sites were shut down, but it also raised questions about the distance a journalist traditionally keeps from his sources. His investigation, published in December, turned out to be the Times' third most read story of the year, at least third most read on the website, behind just two Maureen Dowd columns. Pretty good, considering also that it came so late in the year. And Kurt Eichenwald joins me now in our studio. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Your beat at the Times is usually corporate fraud. How did you end up finding a source in adolescent pornography?
It was the most bizarre fluke of all time. I had just come back, actually, from a book tour about my Enron book, and was looking to do something different and decided I wanted to write about international fraud. So I was doing a Google search for Interpol fraud alerts and came across a posting that purported to be a posting by a Florida law firm talking about an Interpol investigation being done in conjunction with a group of state attorneys general involving a series of websites. And, it was very detailed. It said it was an 8-month investigation. It talked about documents. It talked about all these things that, I was looking at it. It's like a law firm. I thought, well, boy, this is just going to be a layup. I'm going to be able to get this story easily. Mm-hmm. But I started off trying to figure out, well, what is it the story is about? And it listed these websites. I looked at each one. About the first 6 or 7 were credit card processors. Then they got a little weird. Then there were web hosting companies. And there was one called Mexico Friends. Mexico Friends was a dead site. So I stuck the name of Mexico Friends into Google and came up with all of these discussions among people about what was obviously a pornography star named Justin. Hmm. And there were discussions of his exploits. I didn't quite understand what that had to do with fraud. And I went to what is called archive.org. It's a way of finding old websites, captured images of old websites, and put in MexicoFriends.com, and up popped the image of a 14-year-old boy. It wasn't a pornographic image. It was just like something you would see in a school yearbook. And I realized in horror that this boy I was looking at was Justin, the one who they had been discussing as being a porn star. I would love to say that I immediately thought, wow, what a great story. I did not. What I immediately thought was, oh, my God, someone needs to get involved here. Someone needs to alert the authorities or something.
Someone needs help.
Yeah. And I must admit, if I see somebody drowning in the lake, I don't reach for my notebook.
You're fired from journalism, Kurt. That's it.
But I found an online screen name for Justin. I tried contacting him. My first two efforts failed. He told me later that he thought I was a federal agent the way I came at him. And so the third time I went much slower. and engaged him in conversation for a couple of weeks. In the course of that, learned that he was 18 years old, not 14. Got him to agree to meet with me in Los Angeles, because by that point I realized there was a story here. And in Los Angeles, I identified myself as a Times reporter and began to try and persuade him to help me.
You wrote that Justin bought his webcam at first to make friends online. So how did he wind up performing sexual acts for money?
You know, the thing that I think is missed on this story sometimes is it did focus on Justin. It was trying to give people a handle. Justin is one of hundreds. He's not unusual. That was probably the most horrific thing I found. And they all happened the same way. Justin got his webcam, plugged it in, went online. The software loaded his image onto a directory. And within about 12 minutes, he was contacted by his first adult pedophile. Justin's hope was to meet teenagers his own age. He never met one. He did, however, meet thousands and thousands of pedophiles. And that experience, you know, I have interviewed more than a dozen of these cam kids. That experience is repeated over and over and over again, not just from people from kids who are taking money to run their own websites, but also from kids who just have a webcam and are enticed into stripping because they think they're stripping for someone their own age. They think they're going to get a show in return, and oftentimes they're just performing for someone who's planning to put their images up on a pornographic website.
So your understanding is that Justin was generally not aware that he was stripping online for grown-ups.
Oh, no. He knew he
after
was...
After a while, he was.
He knew... What happened was after two or three weeks, somebody offered him $50 to take off his shirt. And he basically didn't see anything wrong with that. He was like, I take off my shirt at the pool. What's the difference? And so they instructed him on how he could get paid online through PayPal.com. And he did it. Now, these folks... What I found in the course of my investigation, which Justin was not aware of, these adult pedophiles are unbelievably manipulative, and they work in concert. They have discussions away from the child about what the child is willing to do, what the next approach is they should take, what's been said to him, what approach didn't work. And there's a reason why they seem to be universally successful on every child they approach. I can explain how I know that in a little bit.
What do you mean by universally successful on every child? I mean, there are so many kids who use the internet, and only a very small number ever wind up taking off their clothes for a webcam.
I don't think that's true at all. If one of the sites we shut down, BigFunHouse.com, had within it a webcam image section where there were child webcam images. About 100 images per page, about 40 pages, page after page after page after page of kids taking off their clothes for the webcam. All of these kids were kids who were lured into it. The volume of webcam pornography that is now running through Cyber Tip Line, which is the means of reporting child pornography, is massive. It is becoming the single largest form of pornography that is appearing online.
And this, I'm sure, is one of the main reasons that your article was so forwarded and emailed around the web. I know somebody sent it to me just because I'm a parent of a 13-year-old.
Parents need... I'm the parent of a 14-year-old, 11-year-old, and 8-year-old. I thought I understood the internet. I thought I understood the dangers of the internet. I thought I was being pretty smart. The 6 months that I was involved in this was the most horrific period of my life. And the things I learned, the things I saw, the things I encountered are so beyond anything that those of us who are not in that world can imagine or contemplate. One of the kids in the world called it the webcam matrix, which I thought was brilliant. And the comment, what it meant was, just like in the movie The Matrix, there is an alternate computer reality that only a select number of people know about. And all those who aren't aware of the alternate computer reality move along in their lives not knowing that it's there.
I do want to open up the phones, especially because so many of our listeners have read this story, I'm sure. So if you want to talk to Kurt Eichenwald, you can right now at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Kurt Eichenwald, New York Times correspondent, who wrote that investigative piece about live webcam porn among teenagers that became the third most read article on the New York Times website for all of 2005. So I have to ask you, do you let your kids use the web still?
I do. I have a very complex process I deal with in terms of what access my kids are allowed to have. My oldest son is what I call it. He's a partner in his safety. We have had from the age of eight, we have had, you know, extremely detailed conversations about what's safe, what isn't, what's expected, what isn't. He basically earns the right to have certain privileges and continues to have those privileges so long as he does nothing that violates our understanding.
How would you know?
That's part of the way that that it works. For example, you have on the internet, within a web browser, you have something called the internet history. If the internet history has been deleted, my son loses his computer. I am allowed at any time to come in and inspect his internet history.
And do you?
Yes, I do.
Do you recommend that for all parents?
I certainly do. But what I would particularly recommend is to make sure that this is not a relationship where, you know, you're the guard and the kid is the prisoner. The kid has to subscribe to this idea. Otherwise, it does not work.
Because they could get around it. They could delete the list and then go start visiting other. Delete the list after that they create for you.
No, because the list goes back 7 days, and so they would have to have an unbelievable level of talent. One of the things that I've said to my son, which may be very controversial, one of the things that I've said to my oldest son is, with all of the rules he has, you know, among them, you can't talk to somebody on instant message who you don't know in real life. You know, a series of other things. But the last rule is if there's a site you want to go see and you don't think you should go see it and you think I'll be bothered by it, come talk to me and in all probability I'll take you there. The idea is to make it less enticing.
Yeah. So it seemed to Justin like something harmless in the beginning. He just had to sit in front of his computer without a shirt on. When did it cross the line to being unlawful?
Probably within about a month after that.
Because the first thing was in exchange for gifts on his Amazon.com wish lists, right?
Well, no. Originally what you had is he was getting gifts for nothing. He was getting gifts for leaving the camera on while he was asleep. He was getting gifts for just for doing his homework with the camera on.
And that's part of the system they used
to
entice him to
the
next
seduction.
Step?
Actually, I want to go back to what I was saying about they succeed. One of the things I found that didn't make it into the story was there's something online, a group of predators who play something called the strip game. And this is by what I've been able to figure out about 50 people who track down adolescents with webcams using some of the directories that exist. And then they enter into a betting game. How many times, how many approaches will it take until we get, in this case it's girls, how many approaches will it take until we get this girl to take off her clothes? And they list, each one makes a bet, they put up their money, they and then they start. And they go in and they report each approach. In the scores of instances where they did this, not once did a girl ever resist the entire time. Every one of them eventually appeared naked on camera, and then that video was distributed among all 50 people.
Isn't it nice to know that pedophiles and pornographers have such a functional community?
Oh, they do.
We'll continue in a minute with Kurt Eichenwald and your calls. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with New York Times correspondent Kurt Eichenwald, who wrote that much-read expose of webcam child pornography. that first ran in the Times. I think it was December 19th.
December 19th.
Is that right?
Yes.
And I'll tell you what, our lines are exploding here. And you do have some critics out there, partly for how you got involved personally with your source in this mm-hmm. case, even though you came to him as a journalist. And let's hear from one of your critics calling in. Richard in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello, Richard.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I read the article, and I found it exploitative and unbalanced. It reminds me very strongly of the daycare scandal we had, 10-15 years ago?
You mean the scares about the allegations
yes,
of
there
daycare?
There were allegations. There were people tried. In addition, it sounds a lot like the Catholic priest pedophilia. And I felt that the tone of the article and the way Mr. Eichenwald's speaking is not at all balanced. And
what would be balanced?
Well, I think you constantly use words. I'm sorry, I didn't write them down as I was listening to you today.
Predators, that's the word.
Well, you use the word, I guess it's predators, but your whole tone and approach seems to be one of outrage. I don't object to someone being outraged, but
Richard, I'm trying to understand what you're getting at. Are you trying to say that this kind of interaction between adults and children is more okay than we're allowing?
I don't think I would say that it's okay.
Are you in NAMBLA?
What?
Are you a member of NAMBLA?
No,
are you coming from that?
I have to be a parent of a daughter.
Okay.
But that's not. I don't think it's the issue. It's the way in which the tone comes across. I don't think it's necessarily wrong to write an article about this, but the tone is so hysterical that I find it disturbing, and okay. It leads me to question.
What is hysterical about the tone?
Well, again, you constantly use extreme words. If I remember in
such
the article, you had this sense of I'm sorry, I've forgotten the young man's name.
Justin.
I got the sense that you had rushed in, saved him. He made all these, and again, it's not what you literally said, weepy confessions. And, you know, that was, what would you expect from someone who gets caught out? He would probably say, oh, I didn't mean to do it. I was
That's not what happened. And, I mean, unfortunately, you are skewing the facts of what happened to fit what seems to be a discomfort in addressing this issue. Now, fundamentally, the level of outrage in my tone, yes, I will not deny it. I am not balanced in dealing with pedophiles. I am not balanced in dealing with Nazis either. I have had the misfortune of the last 6 months of reading thousands and thousands of conversations between pedophiles and children. I have had the misfortune of interviewing children who have been subjected to unbelievable degradation by these people. I have seen images that no person should see. I have had an image in my head that for 4 or 5 months, every night I went to sleep, I had that image come into my head, something that is horrific. I've heard about one of the individuals who molested Justin, who when he was arrested talked to the agent about how his fantasy was to take a young boy out into the woods far from where anyone would hear him and whip the child until he screamed. So yes, I am not balanced in terms of dealing with these people because I have been in this world, I have seen this world, and I understand how fully horrific it is.
I'm going to move on, Richard. Thank you for your call. You have been supported in your involvement with Justin by more media critics than I might have guessed, to be honest, including Byron Calame, the public editor of The Times, who just the week before he wrote with such praise about you, which was this past Sunday, he ripped the paper for its lack of transparency in the warrantless wiretapping stories. But you've encountered some criticism about your close involvement with this source. Jack Schaefer, the media critic on Slate.com, wrote this.
Good old Jack.
After your first piece ran. He wrote, "While I admire Eichenwald's journalistic enterprise and thoroughness, I'm astonished at how he loses control of his 6,500-word investigation when he appears two-thirds through it to serve not as a reporter, but as the legal advocate and protector of the now 19-year-old Barry."
It's funny. It's become sort of the media criticism world and Jack Schaefer. He's now standing out there as the one who's criticizing me. Unfortunately, every time I'm not going to claim the decisions we made are the only decisions that could be made. We had to make choices, and we were facing very serious issues, and I'd actually like to get into that, but first to deal with his criticism. Jack's position changes. His initial position, as you've read, is that we were becoming his legal advocate. What Jack is leaving out is the reason we did what we did. I began interviewing Justin Barry. Justin Barry had the full right to walk away. He was a resident of Mexico. There was no reason he needed to continue speaking with me. He chose to. I was not going to disclose his identity. I couldn't approach someone and say, hi, I'm going to disclose your identity. You have to get them and win their confidence. So this last man's position, again, this is not what happened.
And what Calame praised you for so much was that you repeatedly gave Justin the opportunity proactively to not be publicly identified with his name, even on the verge of the story going to print, even though he had given you permission over and over
again. He was an adolescent sex abuse victim, and he was an adolescent sex abuse victim who was deeply troubled, who was going through drug withdrawal, who was, you know, for months, I did not believe was emotionally competent to grant the right to go on the record. And so I bent over backwards to make sure that, contrary to what the last caller said, that this was not exploitative, that this was, in fact, the decision of a reasoned human being. Now, Jack's argument leaves out the reason we did what we did. Jack just assumes I was trying to be nice. About a week after Justin began cooperating, he disclosed that the identity of a child who at that moment was being sexually exploited. From that point, he began on this one day, he began to disclose other children he knew were being exploited and molested. I asked him, how many do you know about? And we went through them. Ultimately, it was about 7. At that point, I was months from being able to publish anything. There are those who said I should have printed his allegations. I had the off-the-record on-background comments of a teenage drug addict who was going through withdrawal, and I am supposed to write a story that says, a kid I can't identify because he's underage is being molested by a person you don't know. Mm-hmm. An anonymous source said, the source who is going through drug withdrawal. This doesn't pass the laugh test. And so we were in a position where we had knowledge of ongoing criminal activity involving the sexual abuse of children. Now, every profession, doctors, lawyers, priests, the rest, have exclusions in their confidentiality. The exclusion is if you are aware of ongoing criminal threats to other people, specifically to children. The journalistic standards are not on the scale of doctor-patient confidentiality. The journalistic standards are guideposts. And when we were faced with the decisions we had to make, we chose, because there was no other option we could think of, we chose to say to Justin, you need to become a federal witness.
But let me read you one more line from Jack Schaefer, because he's also concerned that, in a larger sense, you put future reporters assigned to the online pornography story into a difficult position. He wrote, will online pornographers and other allied criminals now regard reporters as agents of the state?
I have interviewed more than a dozen cam kids. I have... You know, what's so funny is that nobody has gone to what the real ethical issue here, which is that I spoke to underage children who were online, who were posing naked, who were masturbating on camera, who were being exposed to these predators, who were all of them at risk. None of them were aware of other children, or to my knowledge, none of them were aware of other children who were in danger. And so in each of those situations, they were not on the record, and I walked away. Journalistically, I had no other choice. On a human moral standard, there was really nothing I could do. Justin was a completely different case because this wasn't about saving Justin. Justin was an adult and had to make his own choices. This was about underage kids who were being raped and exploited and we knew about it, and we had to act.
93.9 AM 820 WNYC.org with New York Times correspondent Kurt Eichenwald, who wrote the child webcam story that's been so emailed around, the child webcam pornography story, I should say. And Brenna in Leonia, you're on WNYC with Kurt Eichenwald. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank
you. First of all, I would just like to say I would hope people are outraged when they talk about this topic, and thank goodness you were in your investigation. But I do have a question. Technically, I know that I can check the history on my computer of websites, but can I see any kind of history on anyone my child would have instant messaged?
Your child, if he's instant messaging, has what's called a buddy list. And the rule in our household is you are not allowed to have a communication online with anyone you don't know in real life.
Right.
My oldest son is given a great deal of leeway, but I also tell him when I come in for the inspection, you know that I trust you.
Mm-hmm.
However, I am not so stupid as to imagine that you will never make a mistake.
Right.
And I go through his buddy list one name at a time, saying, who is this? Who is this? Who is... Every person he speaks with will show up on his buddy list. And I do a spot check to make sure that the people he says they are in fact who they say they are. And he is a full partner in his safety online, and he reaps rather large rewards from that in terms of the amount of trust we give him.
Okay. My other question is, do you think that this problem is too big for law enforcement to stop? I mean, it seems so...
The webcam problem or child pornography in general?
Online child pornography?
In terms of webcams, there's a fellow named Brad Russ who is part of the training group for the task force that deal with crimes against children on the internet. And his point was very simple: we're not going to arrest our way out of this problem. By that, it just meant child porn in general. In truth, there is only one solution to this, and the solution to this is good parenting. No child should have a webcam. You could certainly, if you had a child who liked to hunt, you could put a loaded rifle in his room. I don't think it'd be very wise. We now know that these webcams are loaded rifles. You know, at one point, Justin was trying to explain something to me about webcams, and we went to a local store, and he was showing me the variety of them, and he wanted to make a point. So the sales guy was asking us if we needed any help. And he said, well, what are these? And the sales guy, oh, those are webcams. He goes, what are they used for? He says, well, webcam messaging, porn. This is
that was
at
honest.
The point of sale in a major national retail chain.
Whoa.
The sales guy, who was a teenager, talking about what it's used for.
Well, the implication there is that there's almost no legitimate use for webcams.
There is no legitimate use for webcams.
Would you ban
in
them?
The home? No. I would say that any parent who purchases a webcam for their child, allows their child to have a webcam, or has a webcam in their home that is not supervised, is being irresponsible.
By the way, talk about parenting. Justin joined his father in Mexico. This is one of the amazing parts of this story. And told him about his online exploits and the cash it generated. And what did the father do? He actually helped him with the business by hiring prostitutes.
Yes. Justin never had a chance. He had 1,500 people manipulating him on one way. I've always believed, even though he doesn't know why he told his father about his business. I've always looked at that and thought that was his first attempt to really get out. That he went to his dad and said, "Here's what I'm doing," and had an expectation of what would occur. And nobody would expect that your dad would say, "Wow, let's increase the profit margin here."
Right. Why did you pick Justin as the one to help out? Surely you encountered many adolescents in the same situation.
Justin was a unique character in that he had been in the business for 5 years, and he was at the center of a massive criminal enterprise. This isn't just kids turning on the cameras. There is, in fact, a business infrastructure that supports the webcam kids. And Justin was deeply enmeshed in that entire infrastructure. He knew who was processing the credit cards. He knew who was providing the web hosting. He knew who was providing the online streaming. He knew everything. And as a result, he was the centerpiece. He was both a hub and a spoke. Now, the other reason why Justin? In journalism, we go with what we get. We're like prosecutors. We can't pick our witnesses. I can't imagine picking a witness who had, you know, ultimately had a higher level of integrity and honor than this kid. You know, I've been around him for months. I have seen the decisions he has made. He is facing death threats. He knew that. He was at risk of going to prison when he went to the Justice Department. He knew that. He had absolutely nothing to gain. He had a business that was bringing in $3,000 to $5,000 a week. He had a home in Mexico. He had a car in Mexico. He had a girlfriend in Mexico. What he chose instead was no money, sleeping on the couch in somebody's spare room, abandoning his car, abandoning his girlfriend, not being able to speak to any of his friends. Why? And it was solely because once we sat down and talked about what was going on in this business, he understood that people were getting hurt. He wanted out, and he wanted to make sure that the friends he had were also helped.
In the days after your investigation, you reported that the most trafficked portals listing webcam sites of adolescent males had been taken down.
It listed both, but there were some that were exclusively male. There were some that were a mixture. There are portals that are solely for girls.
Okay.
Those portals remain up.
So in either case, do you think that you've had a long-term impact on the availability of this crime?
No. This crime, it's funny, one of the most interesting interviews I had in the course of the story was with a professor who 5 years ago shut down his image viewing on his computer and went online to have discussions with pedophiles in their chat rooms. And back then, he said, they were fantasizing of the day that children would have cameras in their room, of the day that they would be able to directly contact children and direct the pornography. And their dream has arrived. These people are aggressively interested in getting your child naked online. And they pursue it on a daily basis. And there is nothing that is going to stop it other than public awareness.
It's chilling. We're out of time. Are you done with this story? Are you going back to the business world now?
I want to leave this story. It is emotionally traumatic. It is extremely difficult. On the other hand, it's not something that it's not a world that many people have penetrated. It's not a world that many people know about. And so there are other stories to write.
And I would guess there's a book in this.
I've been asked that several times, and the main thing I'm trying to do is get away from it long enough that I can recover from the last 6 months.
Kurt Eichenwald's online pornography webcam first story appeared on December 19th, and there have been those since then. Thank you very much for coming in and discussing this.
Brian
Lehrer on WNYC, and we'll follow up with a call-in on parents and paranoia in a minute. Thanks for listening to today's podcast of The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This was just one of the show's segments. You can hear everything we do on demand at WNYC.org. Check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.